Okay, it's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy.
It's Resonance 104.4 FM in London, where the Truth About Markets, Max and Stacy. Max, this has been a historic past 24 hours, even less than 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I finally got my winter clothes out.
Oh, boy. No, not that. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the fact that the presidents of the United States of America and Iran have just spoken on the phone. This is the first time the presidents of these nations have spoken on the phone or in person since 1979 and the Iranian Revolution. So this news was broken by Rouhani himself, Hassan Rouhani, on Twitter. He basically live-tweeted the conversation.
Right. So is this a political story or a technology story? You know what I'm saying about that?
And an economic one, because, of course, you know, they say, like, well, our guest Chris Cook has said something like $30 a barrel of oil for oil is due to Iran, people fearing Iran. So will the price of oil drop? Will the price of gold drop on Monday? We'll see how it's viewed on an economic front in that way. But I think it's also a technology story, because this is disintermediation for sure.
Yeah. I think it's mostly a technology story, because it shows that the world leaders can communicate instantaneously and transparently away from all the major news media outlets that have now become filters. Instead of just reporting the news, they shape the news. And so now you have two world leaders just communicating directly, completely in public. And yeah, I agree. It's completely historic. And, you know, I wonder where it's going to go from here. Let's say Iran, let's say they become friendly with the U.S. now. And the whole war drums, you know, the whole John McCain, let's bomb Iran meme becomes let's go visit lovely Tehran for vacation meme. So what does that do to the region?
Well, I think it's also partly to do with, you know, the U.S. government will shut down on Monday unless...
What?
Unless the House...
What happened? Iran? Does that have to do? Iran took over. They bought America. They're rebranding it. The United States of Iranistan.
No, it's because, you know, the Congress and the Senate have each passed a different version of the budget for running the annual government budget, and well, the Congress doesn't defunded Obamacare. So now, obviously, the Senate version doesn't have that in it. So they have to reconcile them and pass a budget by Monday morning or the government shuts down. However, you know, in America, these, especially Sunday, the Sunday talk shows are really important to establishing with the population your meme, the propaganda your party is pushing. So all of these Sunday talk shows, they only have the limited amount of time. And with this historic phone call, they've got to devote time to that, which gives less time to the Republicans to make some sort of case to shutting down the government.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Right. So as we were saying, the media kind of shapes the whole you know, political agenda. And so here Twitter has usurped the mainstream media, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And, of course, you know, looking at this... Yeah, kind of from, you know, macro picture. If the mainstream media starts to get completely usurped in this way, then is their lobbying ability in Washington going to be diminished? So what would that, you know, that could have impacts, far-ranging impacts as well.
Well, you know, you speak about this media. We'll come back to this story, but right now I want to talk about another big story that broke on Friday regarding media and propaganda and you know, the revolving door now between these elite classes from media. Well, they all jump to us, like the likes of CNBC and MSNBC and the likes in America. But listen, here in the UK, Stephanie Flanders, the economics editor for the BBC, has just announced she's leaving the BBC to join JP Morgan as a basically an asset management, I think, and on a salary of £400,000 per year. Mm. Your thoughts, Max Kaiser?
Well, it's disgraceful on many levels, of course. And first of all, it makes the entire journalists in the UK look bad. All the UK is a pretty small. TV journalism is pretty small. You have the BBC and like two other channels, and that's it. And so here you have the economics editor for BBC and BBC One and the number one network. It's like, Walter Cronkite going back 40 years or so. Walter Cronkite suddenly joins a defense military contractor during the height of the Vietnam War. So during the height of the Vietnam War, Walter Cronkite, the voice of CBS, the man everyone trusts, moves to, and works now for Monsanto, who makes Agent Orange, which they're dropping all over Vietnam, or Bell Helicopter, who, you know, defense contractor. So here you have, during the height of this period when finance and banking has completely captured the most of the UK economy and is engaged in scandal after scandal after scandal, including laundering money for drug cartels in Mexico, and engaged in massive fraud. At the head of the pinnacle of all this fraud is J.P. Morgan. So there is BBC's economics editor. And what I tweeted about it is like, let's discuss all the stories in the last few months that the BBC did not cover or gave just a glancing mention of. There's the J.P. Morgan mortgage fraud, J.P. Morgan CDS fraud, J.P. Morgan silver manipulation fraud, J.P. Morgan CDS, credit default swaps fraud, the London Whale story. So all these massive law-breaking going on by J.P. Morgan in the U.K., it wasn't covered hardly at all by BBC, the number one. So that's number one. Number two is that not only does Stephanie Flanders slap her colleagues in the face and make them all look bad, including, you know, and I got onto a Twitter discussion with Faisal Islam. You know, my point was that these mainstream people are more interested in access than they are telling the truth. And he was saying, oh, no, that's unfair. Well, a week later, Stephanie Flanders goes to J.P. Morgan. So that proves my point. But the second group to get slapped in the face is the license payer for the BBC, who pays their BBC license fee, many of which are suffering austerity because of rogue banks committing fraud like J.P. Morgan that are not being reported upon. But the BBC will report on quote-unquote scroungers and people who are evading the bedroom tax and let's victimize the poor while not reporting on J.P. Morgan, who's causing the problem, and then doing backdoor deals where they end up taking huge salaries for J.P. Morgan. So it's really quite remarkable on many levels, and it points to what we've been saying for years, is that it's a racket between media, banks, politicians who have created a criminal syndicate. The result is austerity measures that you are suffering as to pay their bonuses.
Yeah, and just like J.P. Morgan's Tony Blair, remember Tony Blair left office after, you know, heading the ground war invasion against oil-rich Iraq, which was, he said, no blood for oil. Well, it turned out it was, because he ended up doing deals in the desert with Colonel Gaddafi for J.P. Morgan. Following that, Kuwait paid him, Bahrain paid him tens of millions of pounds following him leaving office. But, you know, it calls into question all of their economics and financial reporting of the past year, where we've seen things like the LIBOR scandal. They call it a scandal, but it's a LIBOR racket crime. One of the biggest conspiracies in world financial history, I'd say, yeah. In terms of the level of participation, how many people were participating in this trillions and trillions of dollars of fraud.
That's right. That's right. And the LIBOR scandal was always positioned by the BBC as a victimless crime. Nobody really got hurt. It's something that had to be done to save the banks. And if you don't save the banks and the economy goes under, then everyone's under threat. And which is a story written by the banks, delivered to the public by Stephanie Flanders, in a way that is pure propaganda. And the result, again, is this economy in the UK where JP Morgan bankers take 90% of all the income that the economy generates, and the remaining 10% has to be, divided up amongst 60 million people. The result of that equation is quite clear. Stephanie Flanders is what can you say? It's exactly what we've been saying.
Now, there's another story in The Guardian that combines all of these stories into one. You mentioned the Vietnam War, and I mentioned Tony Blair's wars. Well, remember last year, Osama bin Laden was allegedly killed in Pakistan. Well, Seymour Hersh, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who uncovered and exposed the My Lai massacre story. Well, he was quoted in The Guardian yesterday as saying, I'll give you his exact quote because it's remarkable. So he said, D-d-d-d-d-d-d. He said, Cy Hirsch, she said, regarding this Osama bin Laden assassination story. He said, not one word of it is true. It's one big lie. Not one word of it is true. And nothing's been done about the story. So he's saying that, he himself is writing a book at the moment, and he's very busy, too busy to do any investigative journalism right now. But he said this is a story that should be investigated. There should be somebody looking at this because it's quite clearly a lie. So why are no journalists investigating it? And that's because, of course, they get labeled with conspiracy theorists and then get mocked and laughed at and then excluded from those circles in which you might get hired by JP Morgan.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. JP Morgan will give you a big fat check if you don't report on the news. And for journalists, so journalists have two choices. Either they get killed because it's the last year was the worst year ever for journalists getting murdered, or you play along and get the big fat check. So that's why, we've been doing stuff that nobody else has been doing. By reporting on what's really going on in that banking sector, because I think that that's the most corrupt sector, which causes the greatest amount of social injustice.
Well, Albert Edwards of Soc Gen here in London is out with a new piece. Did you see this about it's Zero Hedge is writing about it, and they say, what happens when the Fed can no longer contain the fury of the 99%? So he's talking about these central bank induced housing bubbles, and the housing bubbles are like, that drug crocodile for the middle class. Okay. Now, this drug crocodile originated in Russia, and basically it's codeine mixed with paint thinner, oil, and jet fuel, stuff like that. And it's highly addictive, but basically it bursts all your blood vessels from the inside out. So your skin starts to erupt, and you look like a crocodile. You end up looking like a scaly green crocodile, and your teeth fall out. So this is like the Fed injection, the central bank injection of quantitative easing and cheap cash in order to keep the middle classes hooked and quiet and their teeth rotting out, their green scaly skin. From the outside, we could all see it. We could see that it's rotting and festering in their attics. But to them, they're just looking for their next hit and they're desperate, right? But they're not doing anything to stop the guys injecting the crocodile into their veins.
Yeah, well, so the question is this whole policies of the central bank, and it's a policy of a Ponzi scheme where the requirement, a Ponzi scheme means you always need more people coming in to the pyramid scheme or Ponzi scheme to keep it moving, because if you run out of people, putting money in, then the whole thing collapses quite rapidly. So this is why myself and others said that the Fed by no stretch of the imagination would stop their so-called tapering or stop their quantitative easing, stop the money printing, because it would collapse the Ponzi scheme. And to have that conclusion, you need to have a belief that the Fed is a Ponzi scheme. Now, that is something that you'll never hear on CNBC. Nobody on CNBC will say the Fed is a Ponzi scheme. And yet, when the announcement was made that, oh, we're not going to taper, everyone was shocked. But nobody said it's because the Fed's a Ponzi scheme. They tried to justify the why they were completely wrong to begin with, and then they tried to justify, going forward, when will we see a taper, et cetera. Even without giving any analysis of the Fed as a Ponzi scheme. So in the UK, it's manifested through real estate speculation and by real estate prices moving in a direction that makes everyone put aside any critical analysis of what the government is doing or what the bankers are doing because they hope to be cashing in on their apartment, their house price appreciation. And the people's memory is extraordinarily short because it was only back in 2006, 2007 that there was a run on Northern Rock Bank because of the collapse of subprime due to the Ponzi scheme and securitization of houses. And you had the financial crisis, which was brought about by the collapse of housing, which was because of the Ponzi scheme nature of what the Federal Reserve was doing in the Bank of England. And that was only 5 years ago. Now, 5 years later, people think, it's we see this all the time, Stacey. It's what happens when you all critical analysis of your brain stops working when you start making money speculating because you believe that suddenly all this odd entitlement psychology kicks in. The reason that you're making money as a speculator at the expense of everyone else is because you deserve it, because you're special, because you're intelligent beyond anyone else. You're gifted. You deserve all of this. And that thinking takes hold amongst the speculator class who develop a God complex. We've talked about it before, that and that's easy to happen. And it's self-feeding for a while, and then the bubble pops, and you have a huge crash. And since the last crash, there's been no reform, and there's been no attempt to buttress the balance sheets of the banks in ways that they can cushion. There's no cushion for a collapse. So now it's just a matter of waiting for the system to collapse again and then see, where we go from there. But the real estate market in the UK is clearly in a bubble. It's probably in the biggest bubble since the bubble of 5 years ago. And it will pop as surely as night follows day. The timing is unsure, but given the fact that the Fed will increase their quantitative easing. Now, interestingly enough, Mark Carney at the Bank of England said that he is possibly not going to continue asset purchases. I believe, the lead up to what we saw in the United States, that this is a head fake. It's false. It's just him pretending to be prudent. And again, there is no possible way for the Bank of England to stop asset purchases because it's a Ponzi scheme. So it's just the whole thing will be played out in the UK, just like we just saw in the US. The BBC won't cover it because they're all hoping to get jobs at JP Morgan, like Stephanie Flanders. And the cycle will repeat.
Yeah, but also the UK has one thing that the US doesn't have, which is this new Help to Buy scheme. So that's really contribute. That's a bigger purchases essentially than because it's unlimited. There's no set amount. There's no $85 billion a month that they're going to be spending on asset purchases. Here it's like unlimited taxpayer funding for housing property speculation. And continue with this theme of wealth redistribution and Ponzi schemes. there were just two, I'm going to juxtapose two headlines that I read yesterday. One from Business Week, the Fed's gift to American business. That's from Business Week, and it's just a chart, and it shows $700 billion saved in interest costs by the Fed suppressing interest rates. So right. It's a $700 billion gift, as Business Week calls it. Mm-hmm. Then here's a headline from The Atlantic. All the older single ladies in poverty. Extreme poverty among elderly women shot up between 2011 and 2012. What's going on? And they had no answer. Now, they don't look at the absolute wealth. So what might be in savings or, you know, pension funds. They're just talking about the actual income these women have received in 2011 to 2012. And that was the number of people, women earning just $5,500 a year or less, went like shot up. And they don't know why, they said. Max, why do you think that might be, that they're only earning $5,500 a year?
Well, you just said it, because interest rates were crashed down to less than 1%. So the average interest one would get on a savings account at the bank post-World War II is 5 to 6%. That's the average rate you would get on a savings account. That's a normalized yield curve. That's a typical way that the interest rates are constructed. So to bail out or to gift banks and corporations this $800 billion you just mentioned, that means that the way that this gift works is that instead of having them pay out interest on the money they borrow, they pay virtually zero interest on the money they borrow. So they're getting free money. The only way you can finance that is somebody's got to lose. In this case, it'll be retirees that have savings. So that money was taken from the retirees' account. So these women who live longer than men, so they're single, they're older women, they're on their monthly income, and their income, their monthly income suddenly 5 years ago dropped 80% to 90% because of this gift that was put together to bankers and corporations. And so that's a huge drop in income. Imagine if your income suddenly dropped 80 to 90% 1 month. It would be quite a shock. So what happens is these women, they go through their savings until their savings are gone. And now it's back to the way it was, you know, before anyone thought of creating, you know.
Well, a lot of them are coupon clippers, right? They have, explain what that is in terms of treasury bonds, and that their savings isn't going to be in a normal even savings account, but in a treasury bond.
Well, whether you have bonds that have a quarterly or monthly or semi-annual interest payment, or whether it's just a money market that's paying you 5%, it's still the same situation. The rates go from 5% roughly to zero. So your income collapses. So, you know, a coupon clipper just refers to somebody who's living on their retirement savings. You know, when you put a retirement savings account together, you typically put most of that money into interest-bearing instruments like bonds or corporate bonds. And you don't usually have it in stocks, because the stock market goes through 7 to 10 year cycles. It has a high fluctuation, predictable income, instead of having stocks, which have dividend yields that are lower, typically. So they put your majority of your money into fixed income interest bearing securities of some type. So when they crash interest rates, you are left without stocks. Stocks have benefited. Stocks are up. But most people in their big elderly people with savings account don't have the majority of their savings in stocks. They have them in bonds, because they just live on the income. They get the monthly income, and that's their income. They're not working anymore, and that is their income. So this is what we're saying, that the income was dropped by 90% on those instruments to provide this gift of $800 billion to banks. The money came from these savers.
Well, so there you have it. That's what's going on, is the real transfer of wealth was from these old ladies to the corporations. Facilitating it is the middle class, who is desperately hanging on with their, you know, crocodile teeth and their crocodile skin, hoping that their house price doesn't deflate, right? And that's why they ignore the whole story. And of course, they're watching BBC News, in which Stephanie Flanders is telling them this is all okay. There's no problem with it. And now, you know, I said we would go back to Barack Obama and the whole Republican shutdown of government. Now, Barack Obama on Friday said he slammed the Republicans for threatening to, quote, blow up the entire economy, for being suicide legislators.
Yeah, suicide bankers, suicide bankers. Which is what I've been saying, warning about for years, because of this sense of entitlement and adherence to a ideology of market fundamentalism, where the bankers are willing to kill themselves and others to pursue profits. And here you have a good example. You know, Obama's warning against suicide bankers and financial terrorists. You know, he's a little late in this warning, and unfortunately, his administration is riddled with them. You know, they're all right there in the White House. So if he's serious about getting rid of financial terrorists, he needs to clean house.
Well, he will be cleaning house if the government shuts down. They said he has 1,900 staff. He'll have to cut three quarters of that. His personal staff, in terms of those who cook and clean for him, is 90, and that'll have to be cut down to 15.
Yeah, well, it seems, though, that these government shutdown, we've seen now this happen a couple of times. I think the first time in modern history was under the Clinton regime. And I remember, you know, when the government shut down. And it was quite shocking to think of at first, but then, you know, America's a banana republic now, so government shutdowns are now occurring more frequently, and people are just, it's the new normal. People begin, you know, they just incorporate that in their day-to-day reality. The government shuts down because it's a banana republic. You have a bunch of kleptocrats fighting over a shrinking pie, and shut the government, reopen the government. It doesn't really make any difference. Meanwhile, the business of the world continues without the United States. People are doing bilateral deals. They're doing currency swaps outside of the dollar. Brazil wants to create their own internet that's not being spied upon by the NSA. Russia is a peacemaker in the Middle East. They've pushed out the U.S. and all the Syria talks. So the U.S. is just kind of sinking in a comical way, and, you know, but I don't think it doesn't really mean anything, does it? Who cares?
Well, many of the Western nations are also sinking into this because, you know, we've had the U.N. General Assembly this week in New York, which is why this whole meeting happened between a telephone conversation happened between Rouhani and Obama. Now, there was the other speech by Dilma Rousseff, who is the president of Brazil, which was a really historic and interesting speech that she made as well. She was very fiery and adamant that the NSA spying program was a violation of national sovereignty, that it was basically economic war. And she's also announced that they're going to basically build a parallel internet. Well, really, it's like a cable, it'll go along the bottom of the ocean, a new cable through which you won't have any routers, allegedly, through the NSA, though many articles do point out that the NSA has managed to hack into and tap, basically send down divers and submarines and go put, you know, their own routers in there, like listening devices.
What they should do, if she's serious about it, she should if she really wants to get some action and get some traction on this, she should launch a campaign to completely reform copyright law in Brazil to reduce copyright protection from this lifetime plus 75 years, which is becoming the global norm, back to something like 20 or 30 years. And that would really be the only reason the NSA is spying on people is to protect the copyright industry. Well, not the only reason, but the majority of it. And it's funded by the MPAA, the lobbyists in Washington on behalf of the Hollywood and the copyright cartel. That's what's behind the NSA. They don't want people sharing copies of Bruce Willis movies without paying somebody in Hollywood $5. That's why the entire Constitution has been shredded. So President of Brazil, by saying we're going to adopt a new copyright standard, it's going to be 20 years, and everything in Brazil, by the way, that is been is off copyright. All Hollywood movies are no longer on copyright that have been here for more than 20 years, and that would free her economy up. Her economy would have a huge boost because by reducing copyright in that way, you're now unleashing an unbelievable growth spurt in all intellectual property type industries. The entire economy would be transformed overnight and be the fastest growing economy in the world. And she would send a message to the U.S. that spying and treason and sovereignty and this type of warmongering is unacceptable.
Well, I mean, you interviewed when we were in New York, Greg Palast, who talked about that secret memo, endgame memo, where the U.S. under Larry Summers forced all these nations to sign a trade deal, which forced them to take derivatives, basically. And now Brazil was the one country that did not sign it, and there was also under Dilma Rousseff's predecessor, Lula da Silva, he also remembered the AIDS drugs. Remember, he refused to pay those patent costs. So he used Brazilian national emergency law to say, we're just not going to pay that, and we're going to copy it and make our own generic version. And that really forced the AIDS drugs manufacturers to radically alter their pricing for the developing world because they had to. And that really inspired and enabled India also, threatened the similar after that and has continued to do so since.
Yeah, good example. So, if she applied that to other intellectual property law rights, then as a way to counterbalance the NSA spying on behalf of the MPAA, I think that's the best way to go about fighting back.
Speaking of fighting back, I see InfoWars is covering this story about several big websites are now no longer accepting comments. One of them is New Scientist because they do get a lot of science deniers on there saying everything's a sham. Boing Boing has also turned off their comment section. I noticed that in Kansas, these Christian groups are also suing the State Board of Education for teaching science in school, which they say is atheist. So now there's also the issue of climate change because there was a meeting of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and they said it was 95% certain, is even more and more certain that the climate change is caused by carbon emissions and methane emissions and things like that. So there you have all of that story.
Yeah, so they're turning off their comments. And yeah, it's in large part because of these sites are getting trolled by professional trolls who want to somehow present this idea that man-made climate change and global warming is still up for debate. The debate ended 30 years ago, and now it's just been a scramble by oil companies and other big companies to make it seem as though there's some kind of debate going on, but there is no debate. So they're shutting off their comments. So does this Does this going to curtail free speech, or do people feel threatened that they won't be able to comment? I think some of these sites, including InfoWars, is spinning this as a threat to free speech, that you're not going to allow people to express their opinions. You're cutting them off.
Well, my thought is, after seeing this for years, is most of them are cut and paste. So there's never any, they're not changing any opinion. They're not, I mean, it's not a real debate. It's just annoying if they fill up a lot of the space and try to end the conversation from more, intelligent people who might be having a real genuine debate and conversation and discussing options, or if there are any options, things like that. So I think they just try to spoil the conversation. They don't want people to discuss stuff. But I've seen, in particular, the climate change conversation. I've looked at that, and it really, really is just cut and paste. There are very, very, there are no original thoughts in there. I've never seen one. And so, I just skip over them anyway now. I don't even read them. They don't, they there's nothing there. It's just a cipher for somebody else, which is Exxon.
Right. So instead of a comment that would say, "You effing blank 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 stupid frickin' moron, didn't you read cut and paste link to that's a dead end to a troll." So instead of that being your comment, you now you're forced to write a piece that's 300 words or more, 600 words, 1,000 words, explaining your position and why you mistakenly believe that there is no such thing as man-made global warming. And then you can publish that piece online, and someone can read that piece. And that would be something that they may or may not consider in analyzing the situation. But so, in other words, they're forcing people to have to actually write something longer than just a short comment screed, insulting screed. So it's bad for the trolls. So I think net net, I don't see it as a threat to free speech. The people who are trolling and writing obnoxious, noisy, stupid comments, that now they have to write a 1 or 2 page article at the minimum, which over that period of time, their arguments just fall completely apart like a souffle. They don't have any arguments. They only have screaming and screeching. So if you take away the screeching, they have no arguments. So the trolls, they should have done this sooner. I say shoot all the trolls.
Well, there's one thing I have to say that's, trolls never listen to the other side of the argument, but they shriek all the time. For the past at least 4 or 5 years that I've engaged, 4 or 5 years ago, I used to engage with some, and then I realized it was just like talking to a brick, trying to debate a brick. But basically, they always shriek, "Carbon tax, Goldman Sachs, carbon tax, Goldman Sachs." That it is basically Goldman Sachs, not Exxon or any of these big oil companies. Goldman Sachs had created a scheme whereby they were going to pay off tens of thousands of scientists in order to fabricate all the very expensive research that goes into creating all those documents and all those research papers. That was a loss leader. Remember, they had to have put up that money, cash up front, to concoct a scheme and convince the global population that there was something happening that wasn't really happening. So decades this has been in the works, that Goldman Sachs will have been spending billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars hoping to fabricate this notion that there was global warming and blah, blah, blah. But at the time, if anybody with even half a brain cell, that's all you needed in your entire brain to just read what the options are, what the policymakers were looking at. Now, carbon tax, this cap and trade were discussed. But when I looked at it, my theory was that the one thing that I saw that made sense to how the world operates and what options they always choose is command and control. And that is geoengineering. That's what I said in debates when I did debate these trolls four or five years ago, was that it would be geoengineering, because then they are in absolute control over everything. It's an obvious toll booth that they could erect right outside of our atmosphere. And, you know, basically the concept is that they'll spray these aerosols or like mirrors acting as a mirror to reflect some of the sun, to control how much heat and energy is arrives on the Earth and the planet and all that stuff. So it seemed like an obvious way to erect a very diabolical toll booth, which forces everybody to plead with the toll booth keeper to please let them, you know, live another day.
Yeah, well, I never understood why people are so against fighting man-made global warming and climate change that's brought about by the reckless behavior of energy companies, because they're arguing for having less oxygen. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Why would somebody be so passionately argue about becoming asphyxiated to death?
Well, a lot of them love plants. They say it will be better for plants. So maybe, you know, they want a human sacrifice, and they think, well, if we, you know, if there's more carbon dioxide, plants like carbon dioxide, they say. They certainly don't like heat and drought, but there you go. But they like carbon dioxide, so they think plants will do well. So maybe they think, you know, so what if humans and animals and mammals and stuff can't survive?
Well, yeah, that's one of these so-called arguments that plants absorb carbon dioxide, which is true. Plants do absorb carbon dioxide. And the balance between the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that are absorbed by plants versus the billions of tons that are being spewed by the oil industry is a mismatch. So I like to drink water. If I drink a gallon of water right now, I can die. Okay, if I can drown from drinking too much water. You know, that was a case just a couple of months ago from a radio disc jockey that had a contest to see how much water people could drink without weeing or peeing, and the prize was one of these new toys, the Wii toy. And somebody drank the water and died from, they drowned because they drank too much water too quickly. So the fact that various elements compose something called the environment, which we live in, is not a justification for deciding that, well, this particular element in this particular situation can be completely unbalanced. You know, how about this? Take a house that weighs 40 or 50 or say 100 tons, and then try to balance it on your skull and see what happens to your skull. If your skull doesn't crack, then I'll believe that what your argument is true. If your skull gets crushed under 500 tons of the brick house that you're trying to balance on your skull, then I would say that in that case, the bricks were not a great, it wasn't a great place to park all those bricks on top of your skull. You know, it's just, again, it's a moronic argument, but The in the forum of comments, when you keep pounding the same moronic arguments over and over again, unfortunately, in the United States, which is a country where the SAT scores or the basic intelligence scores are crashing, and people are becoming completely disconnected with the idea of having an internal intelligence mechanism, that is to say, a brain. They rely on outside sources for all thoughts, whether it's Google or television. If you keep pounding and screaming and screeching, you get millions of people who just start screeching because, you know, if you look at the behavior of ducks or any, you know, herds of animals, if they one starts going off a cliff, you know, a lemming will drive off a cliff because it's just a herd mentality. And that's, unfortunately, comments tend to invoke herd behavior, which is then corralled by corrupt media like Fox or BBC, and then use to feather your career. There you go to J.P. Morgan.
Well, again, going back to the plant argument that carbon dioxide is good for plants. Okay, just you have to, of course, be the sort who can ignore all of the news items of the entire West burning down, of Texas on fire, of California on fire, of Colorado on fire, historic, huge forest fires. So, okay, pretend those don't even exist. Just pretend, okay? Now, say suddenly plants wanted to bloom everywhere and turn huge and happy and sing songs. Would humans let them get in the way of their suburbs, their exurbs, their cities? Would New York City allow itself to be turned over to forest because the CO2 had returned and they would love it? Well, you know, I think this story from this week in the U.S. shows you what would happen if plants started suddenly growing all over the place. Hunter shoots the first endangered wolf seen in Kentucky in 150 years. The first documented free-ranging wolf in Kentucky's modern history was shot and killed by an unsuspecting hunter, state wildlife officials have announced. This is, you know, this what would happen. But is this weather, this climate is great for the wolves. Mm-hmm. Providing, of course, they don't get shot dead by the humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there are no arguments against that support this fact that Earth's carrying capacity for 6 billion humans is reached its capacity due to the abuse of energy companies and, you know, climate change and the floods and everything else. I mean, so there's been a game going on for 30 years where the same people who argued that Agent Orange was good for you and smoking was good for you and you know, DDT was good for you and trans fats were good for you and all those same people arguing that man-made global warming is good for you, they've been at it for 20 or 30 years, and now with millions of climate migrants that are leaving countries that are being burned out, roaming the globe, with insurance companies no longer writing insurance on houses that are near floodplains, with catastrophe insurance and the economy being affected by typhoons and hurricanes and cyclones with massive flooding everywhere. It's just the debate will end because we're heading toward an ecological, you know, more of these disasters, and then people will just forget about it. And they'll say it won't even be a comment anymore. You'll be struggling to survive, you know, and it's just sad, really.
Here's a piece on Boing Boing, which has closed out its comments, but though I still see them there, so I don't know. But you mentioned insurance, catastrophe insurance. Now, that's another thing that, of course, the conspiracy about this Goldman Sachs conspiracy is that they're also just trying to charge for insurance. But as Boing Boing points out, insurance industry pricing climate risk is a dead certainty. Insurance underwriters generally operate in the real world where science trumps ideology. That's why terrorism insurance is pretty darned cheap. Despite the politically successful posturing of our leaders, terrorism just isn't a very big threat. So those people who argue, oh, it's just hype in order to charge insurance. Well, go get terrorism insurance. It's going to cost you a few pennies because even though most of our news programs are devoted to covering terrorism events and warning you that terrorist events will strike and Tony Blair tells you and George Bush tells you and Obama, this is the biggest threat in the whole United States and the whole world is terrorism. Well, in fact, insurance costs very little on that because there is no threat according to the insurance underwriters. Mm-hmm. If you try, however, to buy climate change insurance, it's costing big, big bucks because insurance industry has been paying out tens of billions of dollars every year. Ask any of the Swiss reinsurance giants because the reinsurance giants insure the insurers, and they're charging huge premiums for that because they've been paying out real live physical cash of tens of billions of dollars every year, more and more every year, and now they're charging higher and higher premiums because the payouts have been a fact, a reality that they keep on having to pay out.
Well, but, you know, this is a capitalist system with price signals that are not being manipulated. You can make intelligent decisions. So if the administration and the White House said we're going to base our policies on the price signals we're getting in the insurance industry, and we're going to cancel 90% of our wars fighting terrorism that doesn't exist, and we're going to instead put that money into fighting climate change and global warming, then you'd have a huge jobs boom. You'd have a possibility of averting the worst of the climate change disaster. You'd save a lot of dead soldiers. In other words, the price signals tell a story based on the free market, which can be helpful in allocating resources in ways that don't get caught up in ideological dead ends, where you believe that there must be, because your friend was killed by a terrorist 10 years ago or 20 years ago, you believe that an incredible amount of money must be spent in fighting terrorism, but your case study is extremely limited. Meanwhile, your entire existence is being threatened by climate change and global warming, but the death of your friend 20 years ago is trumping, you know, in your mind, the priorities that should be set versus the existential crisis that's real and happening with climate change.
Yeah, but it is partly the news. And, you know, many trolls do argue that the news hypes up, you know, climate change. But obviously they don't, because look at the situation, how people are terrified of flying. Because when a plane crash happens, of course, it's you know, 24, 48-hour news of just nonstop coverage of this plane crash. And yet far more people die every single day driving in a car. 3,000 a year here in the UK, but it never gets covered. If 3,000 people a year died in plane crashes here, it would be, you know, a gore fest, but like 3 a year die maybe in a plane crash here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I forgot what I was going to say, but it's the insurance, you know, industry is the reason why my views on climate change, you know, were influenced 15 years ago when I noticed that the insurance industry was starting to respond to the reality of climate change, and it was being priced into the insurance industry. And my point then was, whether you believe the ideology or not, the insurance industry believes it, and they're going to be paying for it. Whether you believe it or not, you still will pay for it. The bottom line is, the reason why this denial is so fierce in the U.S. and around the world is because people suspect that if the cost of the climate change were reflecting reality, the price of gas would be a lot higher. And, of course, it should be. And people don't want to pay more for gas. They want to pay the least amount possible for gas. So that means they'll support wars against people, even though they're completely unjustified, and they will deny climate change, even though it's utterly obvious and staring them in the face. That this is what the mind has to construct, this fake reality, to justify cheap gas prices. And, of course, gas prices, because it's a finite resource, will keep going higher, as they've been going higher now for the last 50 years. And at the current rate of gas price appreciation, they'll be double current price within the next 5 to 7 years, and that's going to happen regardless. So your all of your denial will be for naught.
Oh, and by the way, also, you know, the Chinese ships have just gone through for the very first time ever through the Northwest Passage across Canada, the Arctic. It saved them a few days. But apparently that's quite a lot in the shipping industry. It saves them quite a lot of the cost of shipping is mostly in the oil.
Yeah, so here's a typical troll comment, is that the troll on that news will say, yeah, didn't you read? It said they needed ice cutters.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, well, what do you mean? Well, why would they need a ship with an ice cutter hull unless there was ice? So you're lying. You said that there was no ice, and but the ships went through and the ships were ice cutters. So why would they need ice cutters unless there was ice? So you must be lying. Okay, so here's a typical troll comment. They're saying the ship went through because, for the first time ever, because of man-made global warming, it's a existential threat that's threatening humanity. But a troll would say, zero in on a factoid that is completely unrelated, but will has the word ice in the comment and construct an argument as to justify their denial. I mean, it's not dissimilar from people who are in mental institutions who like to paint on the walls with their own feces. They'll point to this and say, you see, I'm Picasso. Look, I made art. That means I am Picasso. Completely, forgetting the fact that they're in a mental institution smearing feces on the wall. That doesn't factor into their conclusion. Their conclusion is, I am Picasso. And, well, they have smeared poop on the wall. Well, that's true. I don't know I don't know how you get from there to being Picasso, but in your mind, you've made that connection. And since you are so mentally disabled and mentally disturbed, it's impossible to dislodge this from your mind because you're mentally disturbed.
Well, on a final note, because we have to go, I will say that that passage north of Canada across the Arctic will always, for many decades, will require icebreakers on the front of the hull because there are giant sheaths of ice underwater, which they say will cut a normal hull like butter. So that's always going to be a case for many decades to come. But that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM right here in London.
Now in our 20th year. Okay, bye, y'all.